There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
I've been talking restaurants on the Business Breakfast over the last week. We are now going to speak to one of the UAE's largest restaurant chains, I guess we could call them, or at least a group of different restaurants. Jumeirah Restaurants is responsible for such names as the Noodle House, Pear Sheikh, Al Nafura, and Flo at Emirates Towers, as well as the Old Favourite Agency. They're also in talks about bringing some new food ideas possibly to Dubai. We are joined now by Emma Banks, General Manager at Jumeirah Restaurant Group. Emma, it's lovely to have you in. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Let's kick off looking at what you might do next. I understand you're in chats at the moment with some different restaurant concepts about bringing them here. How many are you talking to?
Jumeirah Restaurant Group is working very closely with our sister partner, Dubai Retail, and we're looking at bringing a variety of different concepts and operators to the region. We are in very early talks, but we're probably talking to about 8 different groups, not just independent celebrity chefs, but more F&B restaurant groups in other parts of the world. So we're looking at bringing very cool, up-to-date, experiential concepts to the region that with proven operators in other markets, and Jumeirah Restaurant Group as the experts in this field, we think it's going to be a very exciting time ahead. Very early stages, but potentially something on the cards for 2018 onwards for Jumeirah Restaurant Group.
Why bring in a concept from somewhere else rather than doing what you've done with the Noodle House, for example, and develop your own?
We are very, very positive about our legacy homegrown brands. The Noodle House, for example, we've just repositioned last year, and we're looking at prudently and strategically growing the Noodle House out in opportunistic gaps in the market in the UAE here. And similarly, Al Nafura, which is a very famous Lebanese legacy brand within the Emirates Towers as well. And we created the new, recently very successful Flo Health Creative Hub. But we also know that there's some fantastic concepts in Europe and America that would fit very well in the UAE. And it's something that the UAE, both residents and visitors, would enjoy very much. So we're exploring that. So I think it's a combination of pulling on our levers of homegrown concepts and continuing to build on those legacy brands, but also combining our expertise as operators with knowledge in this region and bringing in some fantastic proven concepts from elsewhere. Because as you know, the food and beverage business is very challenging, so you've really got to have done all your homework to make sure you're a success.
But when you're bringing concepts in, is there not sort of a discussion about whether you could, you know, make your own Mexican or make your own crazy freaky shake place or whatever it happens to be? Which is the cheaper and easier to do? Bring in a proven concept, as you say, or develop it yourself?
I think it depends on the deal you strike. If you're bringing in a really, really, really big concept with a, you know, really proven name from another region, it depends on the deal. That can obviously be an expensive deal, but obviously you do your economics and your return on investment and the potential to grow that concept in the region. Or also, developing your own concept takes a lot of work, is a lot of risk, and it doesn't always pay off as well. So to be honest, there's costs and risks on both sides, and that's why you need to take each one, be it a homegrown legacy brand or a new proven concept from elsewhere, and do your homework and look at your return on investments. Both are fraught with risks and costs, unfortunately.
I guess these proven overseas models are only good if people actually here know that they're a proven overseas model and they've got some cachet. How do you actually do your research to check out whether Dubai's population know the brand enough for you to bring it in?
Well, we work with business partners on that, but it's about people in the GCC now and in the UAE are very well travelled. You know, residents of the UAE now, they are highly educated, they travel to all the food hotspots of the world, and they enjoy these concepts. So it seems almost in a natural affinity to then transport these concepts that they've either enjoyed in Tokyo, Shanghai or New York back here.
Do we have an affinity to a particular side of the world? I know we're a very international population here, but do we sort of, you know, prefer European models or Far Eastern models? What's the leaning at the moment?
To be honest, I think very on trend is either New York, LA or London, to be honest. And that's kind of how it is in food trends. If it's in New York or London as a main, it's pretty well received in this part of the market.
How do you make sure that they stay, though? I mean, I'm thinking of the Rivington Grill, obviously, and I'm thinking of the Ivy, which were massively high-profile launches, big names for you to bring in here, and then, of course, both have departed. So how do you avoid that?
Well, the Ivy and the Rivington Grill were successful. The reason that they departed was it actually came to the natural end of a 10-year contract. So it was as a result of the closure of that contract and both parties deciding that we had come to a mutual understanding.
Does that suggest that they weren't making enough money out of it?
I think what it suggests is that we actually, at the time, wanted to refocus and reuse the assets that those restaurant locations were in for other business benefits. As you know, the Ivy now is part of the largest youth hub in the world, the youth hub for the local Emirati population, for example. So it was also a combination of the end of the contract, but actually looking at the space that those assets were in.
And have you made more from that space since they departed?
Well, it's actually part of another vertical within the Dubai Holdings Group.
There were questions, though, at the time, though, when they left, about whether they were getting the footfall, if they want the Ivy particularly, I think. I mean, you could go in for dinner and it wasn't the sort of the waiting list type buzz that you would have had perhaps in London.
I think the Ivy and the location in Emirates Towers was a challenge, but Emirates Towers has been completely repositioned now, and I think you'll find if you go in Emirates Towers now, it's incredibly busy, and the footfall is very high. But it's about I think the Ivy also. We did honestly have the challenge with competing against DIFC, which, as you know, is very buzzy and very busy. But Emirates Towers now is a very busy location.
Do you think the Ivy would have worked better if it was somewhere else?
Potentially, yes, but obviously location is key in all restaurant selection, which is why any restaurant location is always a risk.
Location, I can see being very sort of important with restaurants, and we see restaurants sort of springing up all over town to sort of reflect the growth of population in one direction or another. And I'm sure that you see opportunities in new areas, Dubai South, here, there, everywhere else, but of course you're hamstrung to a certain degree about where your hotels are.
We're not. We're very fortunate. That's why we'll be working with Dubai Retail. We've got sister companies in terms of Dubai Retail, TCOM. We obviously have Jumeirah Hotels. We can work with another company, Miras, and also we are supported by our leadership that if we see a strong location and it's in a third party asset, as long as it makes high commercial business sense, we have an opportunity to also put a restaurant in those locations.
So even if it's a standalone, you can have a licensed restaurant?
It depends if it's a licensed area. You know, I mean, we are seeing more licensed areas opening up within the city, but it's still very much depends if that's going to be a particular licensed area. For example, we know at Le Maire there are a couple of licensed restaurants, but there are some quite strict regulations about how they operate their license in those areas.
Well, of course, we've seen the Noodle House pop up all over the place, malls, to the point that, as I understand it, you've even got a Noodle House that's been set up just as a delivery-only Noodle House kitchen. Will we see more of that?
I think at the moment, we're incubating the hub in Dubai Land. We have actually opened just a home delivery hub here, not very far from your studios, actually. We are incubating it and studying it. What we found with that one is we've actually opened in an area that We see massive expansion and growth in this area in time. So we're looking at that business model.
We're having a look at the restaurant business here in Dubai. I had a bit of a discussion in the Business Breakfast studio over the last couple of weeks about problems in the UK with no shows. People booking tables, particularly on busy nights of the year like Valentine's Day, and not turning up. UK restaurants are taking some decisive action. But what is happening here in the UAE? Emma Banks is the General Manager of Jumeirah Restaurant Group. Thanks for staying with us.
Thank you.
What do you see here in terms of no shows? Do we have a problem with it in the UAE?
I'll talk specifically just about some of the high demand restaurants that I operate and manage. Pear Sheik and Pai Thai, for example, especially on key occasions or high volume weekends or busy periods, we do experience, restaurants in the UAE can experience up to 30 to 40% no shows. So yes, it is a problem here in the UAE as well. Historically, customers can book a variety of restaurants and then decide which cuisine they feel like an hour before. I think it is becoming less and less as people understand how inconvenient it can be from a business perspective. But I think what you find most restaurant operators in the UAE are doing, for example, it has become quite acceptable, both from a customer's perspective and from an operator's perspective, to charge either a deposit or an upfront payment or even full payment on things such as popular brunches, Valentine's, Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, New Year's Eve. We've prepaid for a long time. So that sort of practice is acceptable. However, it is now starting to eat into the realms of on busy sort of Thursday or Friday night, should we be taking a deposit? As Jumeirah Restaurant Group, we haven't gone down that route. What we have gone down the route of is with our partners in our customer call centres for taking bookings, we ensure that we get full details and we have what we call a confirmation process where we will email out to the customer the day before, and then also we'll give the customer a courtesy call 4 hours before and just say, you know, good afternoon, good evening, it's Pear Sheik here, we'd just like to confirm your table. And this actually gives the customer an opportunity to almost sort of break that contract there and then without it being embarrassing. They can all, you know, naturally, if they say, oh, I'm sorry, my babysitter's cancelled or something, it's quite acceptable and it allows us to reallocate that booking.
Has doing that cut down on the no-shows?
Yes.
Have you seen
Yes, it has. By taking a proactive but also sensitive manner to the customer, by actually ringing them up and kind of breaking that ice, because, you know, a customer may feel a bit embarrassed about ringing up and cancelling. It's easier just to not do it. But it has actually. And we do, as a business metric, because obviously the most expensive thing in a restaurant is an empty seat. So we do actually monitor our numbers, and we have actually seen a reduction by taking that proactive but friendly approach, by just double confirming quite late on that the customer still wishes to dine with us.
Do you ever bring in ringers to fill the tables? Upgrade people from other restaurants, say to people, look, come on down there. How do you sort of fill those tables to keep that atmosphere that you're talking about?
No, interesting. No, not gone down the route of rent a crowd.
Exactly.
Just yet.
You can call Richard and I, we'll be around in
half right.
An hour.
Well, we'd be delighted to host you at Pear Sheik. No, I tend to find with Pear Sheik, no need to do that. And at Pai Thai, certainly no need to do that. In fact, in Pai Thai, sometimes at busy times, it's a juggling act keeping everybody happy as we allocate tables. It's a fine art that my restaurant managers are geniuses at.
But in days of changeable weather, I should imagine Pear Sheik, which is a bit of a walk through the back of a hotel, that sort of people think, oh, I can't be bothered to walk, or it looks like it might drizzle a bit, you know. There are a lot of variables with a restaurant that's a bit outside your main property.
Yes. Yes, we become experts in weather. You know how difficult it is to forecast the Dubai weather. Well, yes, for example, this Friday, when it started drizzling around 11 o'clock, about an hour and a half just before a fully booked out brunch.
Yeah.
But to be honest, as operators, this is just what we have to cope with, you know. And which is why we actually look at the weather 2 weeks out. And for example, if it's on a busy Friday and we see a forecast of rain, we tend to be sensitive and actually keep some spare capacity so that if we have to move people from outside to in, we have that. Because there's nothing worse than a full restaurant and everybody's sitting on tables in the pouring rain because we can't accommodate them inside. If we do ever get to a position such as that, we then actually do look to accommodating customers in other restaurants, and naturally we do something to sweeten the blow.
I
removed.
I totally misunderstood this next line. It says three of our outlets are now straw-free, Noodle House, Flo and Pier Chic. I sort of imagine that sort of packing cases with all the crockery and the cutlery arriving didn't have any straw in them as padding. Explain what it is. It's not that sort of straw at all, is it?
No, what it is here in Jumeirah Restaurant Group, we're very cognizant of the fact that we're in the beautiful coast of the Arabian waters and we've got beautiful crystal clear sea, and Pier Chic, for example, we sit in the ocean, so we've become very, very passionate and very engaged around the issue of plastic in our oceans, which is quite a hot topic at the moment, but it's something that we've been looking at for a while. For example, in our new format Noodle House last September, we started introducing bamboo and biodegradable recyclable paper straws. So what we've actually done is just increased our focus on this, and we've actually rolled that across all Noodle Houses in Dubai, including the airport. And we now also have taken all plastic straws out of Pier Chic as of last week and out of Flo. We're also looking at removing all plastic straws, swizzle sticks, cocktail stirrers, toothpicks in all our restaurants by the next couple of weeks. We'll then take it on to reviewing all our takeaway packaging to measure the content of plastic in that. It will be a process, but it's something we're very, very, very committed to. We join our sister company Freedom Pizza and Ian, who actually spearheaded this campaign a few weeks ago as well. So we believe very strongly that this is an issue, and I'd really encourage all operators out there to actually look at the issue of plastic in our oceans and what they can do. Simply by stopping plastic straws alone in my sort of handful of restaurants, we'll just stop sort of short of 500,000 straws going into the system.
Is there a cost to you of doing this?
That's the perception, because obviously a plastic straw is about four times cheaper than a biodegradable recyclable straw. But what we're actually doing is we're going with the process of, you know, this hashtag stop sucking. We're actually thinking of ways of presenting drinks without a straw. And if a customer asks for a straw, then we'll present them with the more expensive recyclable one. So we actually believe so strongly in this that we're actually putting the environment first here in this issue. It really is something that we've got to take very seriously, and the amount of plastic going into the ocean is ridiculous.
30 seconds before we let you go, we're big fans of co-working spaces here in the Business Breakfast. You've got Flo, obviously, in Emirates Towers, which is designed to encourage sort of, you know, laptop warriors, as it were. Are you planning to expand that? What are the plans for Flo?
We would be delighted to roll out Flo. We're just looking for the right locations for Flo, and we'd just like anybody to come down on Wednesday for our International Women's Celebration in Flo on Wednesday, where we have some great young Emirati women game changers coming down to talk about their experiences in Flo, including Raha Muharrak, who's the first Saudi woman to have climbed Mount Everest, and Amna Al-Haddad, who's the UAE weightlifter woman. So on Wednesday, we've got some great women down in Flo as well.
Is it true that no one working in Flo is over 30?
That is absolutely correct. We designed and created Flo in conjunction with the Emirates Youth Council. And one of the USPs of Flo is that the whole team is under 30.
Thanks very much for joining us this morning. Emma Banks, General Manager of Jumeirah Restaurant Group. We appreciate your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.